Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. That'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us a very, very special guest I've wanted to have on our program for a long period of time, but I didn't know how to get hold of her, and then our good friend Dr. Dennis Cuddy told me that he had her telephone number, and Linda Hunt, who wrote Secret Agenda, was good enough to come on and be our guest here on our programs. Now, Linda at one time was in charge of investigations for CNN, and she wrote a book. It was published in 1990-1991 called The Secret Agenda. It was the story of Operation Paperclip. Operation Paperclip was the government military program by which the CIA and the military brought German Nazi war criminals to the United States and allowed and helped German Nazi war criminals escape to South America, people like Klaus Barbie and Joseph Mengele and certainly Bormann and the others. They all were down and they're living it up in South America with the full help and support of people in our own government. Linda, how did you ever get involved with studying Operation Paperclip? This is such an incredible story.
Well, I was always looking, working for a television investigative unit, I was always looking for a good story. And I'd heard about Paperclip, but the myth was that all of these people were nominal Nazis and their backgrounds were carefully checked and everything was hunky-dory. So I found the actual documents of the intelligence group that ran the project, and under the Freedom of Information Act request, got them declassified and went in to see what was what. It didn't take long to find out that, you know, the whole operation, what was known about it was a myth, and that they, in fact, brought war criminals over and cleaned up their records and changed their files, and some of them got U.S. citizenship as a result. And I thought, this is a heck of a story, so that's how I started on it.
And of course we always hear about Werner von Braun. Certainly von Braun was a very, very famous scientist and was the father of the American Space Agency, but few people understand he was an officer in the SS, and he wasn't simply a casual officer. He was involved directly with some of the slave labor, wasn't he?
Yes, both at Peenemünde, the rocket base, and at Dora, which was the underground factory that used 60,000 prisoners as slave labor. In fact, there is a document that surfaced after the Berlin Wall went down. Both Mittelbau-Dora and Peenemünde are in what used to be East Germany. It's a memo from von Braun to an SS officer at Buchenwald thanking him for the tour and for helping obtain more workers, quote unquote, for Dora.
All right,
so
fine.
He wasn't an uninterested bystander.
All right, you held that thought for just a moment. We're going to bring some other stations on board here, and then we'll be right back with Linda Hunt, who wrote the book Secret Agenda. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Linda Hunt, who was formerly an investigative journalist for CNN, and she had come across the story of Operation Paperclip. The book was eventually published in 1990-1991. An interesting study in thought control today is to try to get a copy of her book. You can find it up on the web, $125. That's what my copy of the book costs. And as I told Linda, you must be getting awfully rich off of all those books up there, aren't you?
I'm not making a penny. This is a book that somebody bought somewhere and is reselling them on the Internet.
And, of course, it's just very, very hard.
No, I'm not getting rich.
No, I know that. But it's a very important story. And, of course, the average American has never heard that our government, high officials now violating the laws, because certainly President Truman had signed a law saying we couldn't, of course, bring any of the Nazi war criminals to America. And yet, how did they get around? How did they get around violating the laws? And how did they justify helping these ruthless Nazi war criminals?
Well, the people who ran the project were intelligence officers, military intelligence officers, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And they were in charge of investigating these people. And, of course, everything at that time was classified. And so it was relatively easy to hide what they're doing.
That's sort of like just what they're doing today. Everything's classified. We can't find out what's going on.
Yes, isn't that interesting? We'll probably find out in 20 years.
All right. Well, anyway, of course, what you found out about Operation Paperclip was really rather shocking, wasn't it?
Well, it certainly was to me. The extent of the people, you know, unfortunately, Holocaust historians haven't dealt much with slave labor. And it was a massive program that almost every company and business in Nazi Germany used forced laborers. Ordinary people used forced laborers in their homes as workers or gardeners or whatever. The prisoners at Dora, every day, some of them would be marched clear across town to work as forced labor in businesses. So it was an enormous operation. And many of the paperclip scientists who were brought over here worked in what would be called defense contractor kind of places that built ships and airplanes and rockets and that used slave labor.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll bring our last stations on. All right, Dr. Stan and Linda Hunt is our guest this afternoon, and she's talking about how many of the Nazi scientists who were brought over here were involved with the slave labor, and of course these slaves were they were brutally treated in many instances, weren't they?
Oh, yes. In Dora, for example, which was an underground V-2 rocket factory, where the German scientists that were brought over after the war and worked for NASA on the Apollo moon rocket, they worked. Some of these prisoners were hanged from the ceiling on cranes in order to scare the other prisoners into submission.
They would simply leave them hanging there for days and days.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
As a constant reminder that if you didn't do what you were supposed to, they would hang you, too.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And in interviewing some of them, it was very frightening for them, of course.
You've talked to some of the prisoners.
Yes.
All right. So, I mean, but these are the stories the American people were never to know, because this would be very embarrassing to realize that, for instance, the air base at, what is it, somewhere in the south, is named after Strughold, General Strughold, who was one of the most vicious of the Nazi war criminals and involved with all sorts of horrible experiments. Would you like to talk about General Strughold and what is the air center here in America named after this illustrious individual?
Yes, Hubertus Strughold was a Nazi doctor in the German Air Force, and among the people brought over, he was one of them, and around 15 to 17 other of his notorious colleagues. Some of them were implicated in the crimes at Dachau. If you recall, at Dachau, some of the Nazi doctors conducted high-altitude tests where they put Jewish prisoners in airtight containers and simulated a high altitude in order to find out, you know, how long it would take for them to die or whatever without any air. And a lot of them were brought over, and they worked for the U.S. Air Force down in Brooks Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas.
Now, of course,
by the way, in cooperation with NASA on the space project, of course, with the space capsule and how to protect astronauts when they're in an airless atmosphere.
Well, of course, the thing is that what Strugel had done was really rather well known. In other words, they knew this. They just cleaned up his files so they could bring him over here.
Well, they didn't even do that. They just, one day, the Nuremberg trial, the Nazi doctor case, the Army intelligence officer showed up at the place where the Air Force had these people over in Germany, working for them, and arrested five of them to go on trial, in the Nazi doctor case, and immediately Strughold and the rest of them were whisked out of Germany to United States, and that was that.
Well, of course, the justification was, well, we wouldn't want the wicked communists to get hold of these people and their knowledge. And wasn't that the justification for allowing so many of the Nazis to get into South America?
Yes, the idea that if we didn't get them, the Russians would.
But of course, why would we worry about somebody like Dr. Mengele, the Angel of Death? I mean, I would think we'd want to give him to the Russians. They'd treat him pretty badly. And why would we help Klaus Barbie, who was allowed to go to South America and eventually get a large shipping company and live like a king?
I think Barbie's easier to understand in terms of he was an intelligence source, and I guess they figured that after they got through using him that he would know a lot about our intelligence operations, and so they didn't want him to be caught. And they also did him a favor by sending him there, didn't they?
Yeah, they sure did. And this is why we actually helped so many of the Nazis get to South America. See, this is the thing. The only one that was ever taken out of South America was Eichmann, and he was captured by the Jewish organization that was hunting down the Nazis. But he sure didn't get any help from the CIA or the OSS. You know, they did that on their own, and the rest of them lived happily ever after. And it's just a little infuriating when we find high government officials helping the Nazis and then the media covering this up, because actually, of course, when your story came out, it got quite a coverage initially, and then it just sort of died.
Yes, it did.
And you, of course, was working for CNN. Did CNN carry the story when you were there?
Yeah, I did a four-part series, and it got a lot of press. And then it's sort of the envelope is closed.
The envelope is closed, and I'd say that the average American, I know I feel I'm fairly well informed, and really until more recently, recent years, I'd never heard of Operation Paperclip. And yet, of course, it was such an important part of American history. So, you know, as you...
Well, I don't think you ever use it. You know, they never learned that in school. And
yeah.
The sad thing to me that's really disgusting right at the moment is that some of these people, such as von Braun, are still held up as heroes. If you go to Huntsville, Alabama, there's buildings named after him, and they're lionized there.
All right. Now, why don't you tell our listeners about General Rudolph? Because he was certainly another of these wicked criminals, and certainly he should have been tried and convicted and probably executed. But who was Rudolph, and how did he get off scot-free?
Rudolph was the production manager of the V-2 rocket operation in Germany, was a high right-hand man of Wernher von Braun, and at Peenemünde Rocket Base, there were concentration camp prisoners that he helped bring there specifically to work as slave labor in his production factory, and these prisoners lived in the basement underneath the factory in the same building. Then when the British bombed the place in August of 1943, and the production facilities were moved underground to Middle Baldora, Rudolph went there as production director. He got off scot-free until around 1984, when the U.S. Justice Department's Nazi hunting unit tracked him down, and he relinquished his U.S. citizenship and left the country rather than face war crimes charges.
So why wasn't he tried for war crimes? I mean, he was certainly one of the people who was using the slave labor, and they were brutally treated. So why wasn't he ever treated?
We don't try them in this country. All a Justice Department unit can do is deport them.
All right, and where did he go then, do you know?
He went back to Germany.
Was anything done in Germany?
No.
You have to ask yourself.
You have to ask yourself
why. I mean, when the Germans had made such a big issue of being anti-Nazi, and here was one of the major perpetrators of this whole thing, and there certainly were a limited number of people who were tried and executed at Nuremberg.
Very limited.
But it was very, very limited, and I think that this is what you learn from reading Linda's book: is that much of our perception. Well, I think it's a lot of smoke and mirrors and rhetoric over reality. I know we go through the actions, but we get down where the rubber meets the road, and you find that there's a big cushion there. So, you know, of course, as you told the story, you talked to many of the military officers who were involved. How do they rationalize and justify what they did?
First, that we needed their skills. They were, many of them, of course, von Braun and the rocket group came over here and built rockets for the U.S. Army, and then the Saturn V rocket for NASA. There were jet aircraft people who came over and worked for the Air Force, and a total of 1,600 of these people. So first, the rationale, in fact, the purpose for the program was to exploit their skills. As President Roosevelt said once, the purpose is to strip Germany of any means to wage war, including its scientists. And so that was the purpose of it.
That's it.
And then, of course, Cold War revved up, and the purpose became getting them away from the Russians.
And of course, then we justified what we did because we had the Russian enemy over there. So, we had to organize against the Russian enemy. That was the rationale then?
Yes. There was never any, there's always other alternatives to the actions you take. And in the records of the project that ran it, they never saw any middle ground. It was either or. They didn't consider on some of these that they knew were really bad war criminals. If they interrogating them in Germany and leaving them there, which meant that they could still utilize their skills but not bring them over here, clean up their files, and give them U.S. citizenship.
And so this is the great, great tragedy. We've got Bart calling in from Carmel. Bart, did you have a quick question? We're going to go to a break here.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Very quick question. Ma'am, is it true that Nazi General SS General Walter Dornberger, who ran DORA, that he was later installed as CEO of Bell Helicopter? Is that correct?
Yes, Vice President.
Vice President.
Maybe we can
Vice
talk.
Vice President of Bell Helicopter in Buffalo, yes.
We'll talk a little bit about Dornberg when we get back.
Oh, that's
thanks
true.
For calling.
Can I ask one last question?
Well, go ahead.
Real quick. A friend of mine was Special Forces in the Vietnam era, and when he got out of Vietnam, he was part of the rotating guard at Spandau Prison, where one lone inmate was there, Rudolf Hess. And he said it was common knowledge that that was not Rudolf Hess in that prison. And I'll take your comments on the air. Thank you, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll be back here in just a moment.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of...
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and this is the time I want to tell you about some of the things that we carry at Radio Liberty, and certainly one of them is the Miracle 2 soap products. Now, we can't make any health claims for them. We can tell you an awful lot of people who use these products give us all sorts of reports of the wonderful things it's done for them, and they tell us that it's helped their rashes and their acne and their digestive tract, and, well, all we can do is suggest you try the products yourself. There's a soap. There's a moisturizing soap, which I've used and seems to have helped me with a rash. We can't say that it's that, but all I can do is tell you that I wouldn't be without it myself. And then there's a gel, and there's a lotion, and then there's a neutralizing, a very alkaline solution. And we have a special introductory offer if you're interested in at least trying the products. If you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the Miracle 2 products. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Linda Hunt, and of course Bart was making a comment on Rudolf Hess. I think that's a little out of your field of expertise, isn't it?
He had 2 questions, one about Dornberger.
All right, fine, right.
Dornberger was arrested by the British after the war and held for a couple of years with the idea of trying him for war crimes as a militarist. Then he was brought over here under paperclip and worked for the Air Force at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And then he, from there, he went to Bell Aircraft, Bell Helicopter in Buffalo. So he certainly got off the hook easily.
Now, of course, was he really involved in some various nefarious activities?
Well, I'm working on another book on Peenemunde Rocket Base, and the records there clearly show that he went around and requested that slave labor be used in two other factories that they started with kind of offshoots of Peenemunde. And was Rudolph's request for slave laborers there went up the line to Dornberger, and Dornberger then passed on the request to his higher-ups. So he certainly was implicated in it.
All right.
And the Hess, that issue came out with Hess. I can't remember whether it was his children. Some of his relatives were complaining that he wasn't, that the real Hess wasn't there. I was very interested in investigating that and had a former retired FBI agent interested in helping me, but never did. It would be an interesting project because I would think that if you had had some things, certain things, you'd be able to prove or disprove it simply from a film of Hess during the war. There are examples of his signatures in captured German records in the National Archives. And so with things like that, you might be able to compare him with a person that was in Spandau and be able to determine whether it was or wasn't him.
I know his wife used to visit him on a regular basis, and his son had said that he felt he was murdered at the end when he died under very mysterious circumstances. So if the family didn't think it was Rudolph, why didn't they say so, at least the son and the wife?
I remember that they did, sort of at the end, make claims that it wasn't him or something.
Well, there was
a long time ago.
Sure, there were a lot of claims.
What I find interesting is that he was kept there far longer than anyone.
And, of course, his crime was that he wanted to try to end the war. I don't want to get off on a discussion of that, but the reason that he flew to England, and it's covered in two books. One is called Prisoner Number 7 by Colonel Eugene Byrd. The other is called Motive for a Mission by the son of the Duke of Hamilton. He was flying to meet a group of people called the Round Table. And, of course, this was a group of British aristocrats who had been very, very favorable to Adolf Hitler, had helped him. And I think that the last thing they wanted the American people or anybody else to find out is the real reason why Hess flew to England. Because it would be very embarrassing. Of course, that's my personal opinion. Maybe you can investigate it and get to the real truth of that. But that's another thing. I think, first of all, you're going to finish this book on the concentration camp. What is it?
Peenemunde.
When's that going to be done?
I hope in the fall. It's going to be called Rocket Slave, and I will have a website called rocketslaves.com.
All right. Do you have a publisher for the book?
Not yet. I haven't finished the book yet.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you get the book.
But you'll be able to buy it on the internet. I can make sure of that.
All right, fine. I do know.
And not for $125.
You're going to charge $125 a copy?
No, I said not for $125.
Not for $125. All right, fine. Well, our guest is Linda Hunt. Of course, the book is called The Secret Agenda. As I say, it's a very, very hard to get today because it talks about Operation Paperclip. So we've got Fred on the line from Salinas. I'm going to ask Fred if he'll just hang on until we get back. And when we get back, we'll take your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Fred over in Salinas, just hang on there.
Now, most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been the secret societies. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and let me just comment that we carry the Big Berkey water filters, and of course these are wonderful water filters. The Big Berkey has been used for 150 years by missionaries. It's made of stainless steel. You put the water in the top, a couple of gallons, it comes out the bottom, and it's drinkable, and you can use it to filter river water or pond water or lake water, and that's why the missionaries like them, and we've talked to missionaries who've used them, and they think that they're really great. Now, simply the water goes through ceramic filters that are packed with activated carbon. You can actually activate that again and again by boiling it. The product costs $239 and is available in every state in the Union except for California and Iowa. But there is a product that is available in those, at least in California. It's called the Berkey Light. It's made of Lexan. It's exactly the same design as the Big Berkey. But Lexan is transparent, so you can see the water level, and that's what we have, and we rather like that. And then, of course, the filters are much more complex. They really work much more efficiently, and they will simply remove almost all of the pesticides and herbicides and other things you're concerned about, and bacteria, and for the chlorine and the MTBE. They won't take out the fluoride, but they have special post filters for both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light that will take out the fluoride. Now, the Berkey Light has what we call the black Berkey filters in them. There are only two of them, but they have to be changed every 2 to 3 years depending upon how much water you run through it. So you can decide which one you want to get. The Berkey Light's only $199.95. If you get them through us, you'll get a four-tape set or a video that we produce. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask about the Berkey filters. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and with us on the line is Linda Hunt, and also with us on the line is Fred from Salinas. Hi, Fred. How are you doing?
Good afternoon.
Have a question or comment?
I had a couple of comments. I wanted to ask Linda if she had ever heard of some of the experiments that they did in the camps by throwing people into a different degree, low temperature water, and seeing how fast they died in water. There was laws passed that said that they couldn't use any intelligence that they got off of those experiments.
All right, let's ask Linda, have you heard of experiments such as Fred is describing of simply putting people into freezing water?
Oh, yes. Those were horrible experiments that used Russian prisoners of war, and they put them outside and literally froze them to death in these huge vats of cold water in the dead of winter.
But, of course, the Nazis justified what they did in the name of science. It was all for science.
They did that, I think, to see how fast that their downed pilots would, supposedly, you know, that was what it was for. But
yes.
We used that. They used that, but they turned right around and used those tables in, I've been a fisherman all my life, and they use, we have something called a survival suit. And they used those tables in showing how fast a body died in different degrees water, and how these survival suits would save you in the water. And interesting to find out.
The problem with using any of those experimental data is that unlike ordinary experiments, these people were concentration camp prisoners who'd been
were kind of emaciated,
starved to death. and living in filthy, deplorable conditions to begin with. And then the experiments themselves were not conducted in any kind of real scientific way. And there were several studies right after the war, including one done by Leo Alexander, who was the Nuremberg medical expert at the trials, and he did several investigations about the
Nazi
the validity of using those.
Right. And he didn't think it was
another thing. Another thing I show in my book, one of the experiments that used gypsies during the trial for the defense attorney and the defendant got a hold of the actual original documents and erased. They didn't want them to find the survivors, so they erased a lot of them of the what was on the documents. So you don't know even with the records what's what there.
Okay. I also wanted to say one other thing. I got to spend a lot of time with a man named Carl Eifler, who was right up there with Wild Bill Donovan in forming the OSS.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that at the end of the war, when they disbanded the OSS and then they started the CIA, they brought in a great bunch of German intelligence people, and they used the same method that the Stasi used for forming the CIA. Do you know of anything at all about that?
Oh, General Galen was his name, was head of the intelligence of German intelligence under Hitler, and he was put in place after the war as head of West German intelligence.
Yes.
And his whole network then became just went back and did the same intelligence for West Germany that they had done for Nazi Germany.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever run into anything on Heinrich Mueller, who was the head of the Gestapo?
There's a three-part book that's very interesting.
That's the Gestapo chief trilogy,
yes.
Right. What's your impression of that?
I've only gotten one part. I know the records it was based on. I haven't read all three parts, so it's hard to say.
All right, fine.
Do you know the name of the English name for the Waffen SS? Do you understand what that means?
No, what was it, Fred?
It's the Homeland Security, you know.
Oh yeah. Okay. Okay. Fine. Thanks so much, Fred. And our telephone numbers, if you're
Thank
out
you,
there,
Fred.
That's 1-888-24 Liberty or 464-8295. Our guest today is Linda Hunt, and of course she wrote Secret Agenda, which is a very, very important book, very, very difficult to get today because, of course, let's put it this way, it's very embarrassing for the average American to realize that many of these vicious Nazi war criminals, and these were people who should have been imprisoned or punished or executed, and yet they came here to America and they lived out their lives very, very comfortably. And of course, very, very concerning for, I think, for Linda and many other people as they begin looking behind the scenes. How did you manage to get that freedom of information material?
Well, the Freedom of Information Act allows anybody to formally request classified documents from the government, and most of the paperclip records were physically in the National Archives, but still classified and under military control. And I filed a request through the National Archives. I also got a lot of records from Army Intelligence because the Army CIC was the unit that investigated these people after the war in Germany. So those records were important. It took years. Absolutely years to get these records and fighting all the way. But what bothers me is I don't think now under the current conditions of our Homeland Security that this book would even exist, because I don't think I'd get the record.
In other words, everything is being done to conceal everything from, well, we're told we don't want Osama bin Laden to learn what really had to do with what happened on September 11th. I'm sure they used the idea that we didn't want the Nazis to know any of the facts that we were keeping secret from the American people. And I don't think they were worried about the Nazis. I think they were concerned about the American people learning the truth. Did you ever have that feeling?
I think they were I think they were protecting their themselves.
All right, fine. Now, what
a lot of the records that I had to fight over were records about the cover-up and what the group in the Joint Chiefs of Staff had done that violated all kinds of policies.
And laws and moral laws. Now, what about the man who was in charge of Paperclip? As you point out, he was a communist spy.
Yes, the Army intelligence officer that ran Paperclip from 1959 to 1962, his name was William Henry Whalen. And he was convicted of espionage in 1966.
And he was actually selling our secrets to the communists.
Yeah, I thought that was the ultimate irony. They whisked these people and changed their records and cleaned up their files to get them away from the Russians, and then one of these people running the project was giving the Russians everything.
And, of course, these are the things that the average American has very little idea of. I'd never heard that until you brought that out in your book.
You know, what was surprising to me is his case was quite well known. In if you look at literature about spies, he's in there. But nobody'd ever talked about or uncovered what it was he did in the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They talk about him being a high-ranking person in the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And I found out, because I got the records during that time declassified and was familiar, saw his name on the records, and that's how I found it. And then, of course, I got copies of his trial records. But that was a real kept secret.
Well, now, one of the things that you talk about is this group of military officers that works in some sort of a Washington, D.C. organization that works with military in South America. And, of course, they were, of course, helping the Nazis down there. At least they were well aware of the fact that the Nazis and many of these vicious war criminals were down in South America with the full knowledge and really, in many instances, the support of our own military. Hadn't we actually encouraged South America to take these German war criminals in?
Well, there was a man over here working for the Air Force by the name of Walter Schreiber, and he was notorious, involved in all kinds of experiments. And the Air Force was so brazen, they put a press release in a national magazine about how they hired him and, you know, he was going to be working and doing this and that and another thing. And a Nuremberg prosecutor was reading the magazine one day and nearly had a heart attack, because this guy was on wanted list, and this prosecutor remembered that during the Nazi doctor trial they were looking for him. Here he was working for the Air Force. So he blew the whistle on the guy, and the Air Force contacted in Washington it's called the Inter-American Defense Board, and arranged for this guy to be quietly shipped off to Argentina, where he lived happily ever after.
And you mentioned there were a number of Luftwaffe pilots, that's German Air Force, that were actually ended up flying for the Argentine military.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of South American countries had Nazis down there.
And, of course, Joseph Mengele, the Angel of Death, one of the most vicious of the concentration camp doctors there, or experimenters who just seem to have a penchant for experimenting on children, he lives out comfortably the rest of his life in Paraguay, wasn't that right?
Yes. What's also disturbing to me about his case is his boss, who was just as implicated in what Mengele did as he was, even though it was not him who was actually in the camp, but he directed Mengele as to his so-called research and so forth. And he just he was a university professor, and he just was untouched by the whole thing after the war, and just continued on his professorship in West Germany.
Always in the name of science, they get away with so much of that. Well, you know, there were just so many of the incredible, incredible stories in your book about these names that we've heard of, and of course how they ended up, you know, living comfortably. And of course, what was it? Klaus Barbie ended up with an international shipping line.
Yes, yes, and then eventually. You know, the U.S. had to apologize to France over that situation.
And what was that now?
France was looking for him after the war, and the U.S. Army in hiding him and whisking him away to South America impeded the French finding him. So... later, when he was found, the U.S. apologized to France for that.
But
it was rather embarrassing for us.
But it really didn't make any difference. By that time, he was comfortably down there, and was he ever actually taken out of South America?
Yes, he was eventually tried in France.
Well, what did happen then with that?
He was tried in France and convicted.
Okay, was he executed? Because I think he had killed, a couple of hundred Jews or something?
Yeah.
I've forgotten the details. But. All right, fine. Well, I'm glad that they did get him out. But that was many, many years later, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, many.
All right, fine. Well, now, looking back on this episode, certainly the Americans justified they were doing because, of course, they were keeping these people out of the hands of the wicked communists. Did these people honestly believe what they were doing was somehow morally right? And I'm talking about the people in our military, our intelligence units, because you actually interviewed some of them.
Yes, I did. Well... one of them's comment was, look what they did for us. Well, that's true, you know. But that sort of means to say that it's okay to use someone who is involved in murder if they can take us to the moon.
Well, that's sort of like saying it's all right to work with the mafia, you know, because they get really a very efficient organization. Sometimes they
yes,
can actually help
much.
Us, right? Well, now, of course, you know, looking back on this whole thing, what message do you think there is for the American people? What can people learn from reading your book, if they could ever get a copy of it, of course?
Well, I hope they can. Maybe they can go to the library, I hope.
The copy that I have came out of a library, and somebody got it out of the library. And
my word, you paid $125 anyway.
Right, that's right.
Oh. That took me back. But anyway, I think one of the things that bothered me was, I guess I was raised in an era where there was a right and a wrong. And, you know, the 50s was much more black and white than now. Now everybody rationalizes and there's everybody has an opinion and there's no right or wrong and so forth and so on. But it's an example of how you get in a lot of trouble and get our country in a lot of trouble when you play with the laws. I hope that's the lesson. And I think now we need to watch very carefully because it's sort of like the McCarthy era. There were a lot of bad things done in this country in the name of anti-communism during the Cold War. And this time period with our Iraq situation and the Homeland Security situation, we need to be very careful that we don't get back into that, because this is a wonderful country and it can be our freedoms are fragile that we need to guard.
I share your concern, and I think it's so easy to, I say that anybody who doesn't completely support the government must be with the terrorists, or must be with the ACLU, or must be with the radicals or the communists, and I think that people have a right to disagree, and I think as long as we have that right, we'll be free. But when people begin to fear the government, fear to speak out, then, of course, I fear for the freedom of the people. Well, thank you, Linda. It's been wonderful having you. Our guest has been Linda
Hunt.
Well,
I really appreciate it.
Our guest is Linda Hunt, author of The Secret Agenda, and she'll be with us one more time, I think, on our evening program sometime next week. Anyway, I want to thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Linda Hunt. I hope that you enjoyed that. I wish we could offer her book. We can't, but we do have several books that go into a lot of this. One of them is called Operation Bluebird, written by a psychiatrist who took care of a lot of the victims of the MKUltra experiments, which grew out of Operation Paperclip.
Now, most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been the secret societies. I wanted to tell you about a tape we had. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time. What I want to mention, we carry some wonderful books that will really give you insight into who really rules the world. And one of them is written by Professor Carol Quigley. It's called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. It's 1,342 pages. But Professor Quigley had taught at Princeton and Harvard before he went to Georgetown University, where he became Bill Clinton's mentor and explained to Bill who really rules the world. And Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, was published in 1966, about the time when Bill Clinton was a student at Georgetown University. And Tragedy and Hope is the history of the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created that metastasized to America and became the Council on Foreign Relations. It's all there in the book. In fact, the book was so revealing that no sooner had it been published and disseminated, somebody bought up the publisher, Macmillan Company, and destroyed the place to the first half of Professor Quigley's book and then lied to him for years afterwards. Now, if that you find that impossible to believe, we have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells that. You can get that two-tape set either in the Secret Government four-tape set or with the Tragedy and Hope special. If you're going to get one book and read it, get Professor Quigley's Tragedy and Hope. It's a wonderful, wonderful history written from the point of view of a very liberal professor who believes we need a ruling elite. And he tells you quite openly all this about communism. I mean, all these foolish people who think there's a communist conspiracy responsible for turning East Europe and China over to the communists. It was never that. There were communists working in our State Department. It was the Anglo-American establishment, the descendants of Cecil Rhodes' secret society, who had a dream about a new world order and a new world religion. Call 1-800-544-8927. Order Tragedy and Hope or the Tragedy and Hope special. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will decide to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. As we reach out on Internet 5 hours a day, shortwave 4 hours a day, and on about 60 stations every week, but they all have to be paid for. And so if you believe that there is a problem, if you believe you're going to hear information here you're not going to hear elsewhere, if you believe we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological battlefield, then we hope many of you will decide right now to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And so for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us as we reach out to educate the general public. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. I'd suggest our February newsletter. It explains to you what Dick Cheney was doing on the morning of September 11th as the plane was coming in to hit the Pentagon. Because you will actually read the testimony of Norman Mineta, who was Secretary of Transportation. It was in the bunker with Dick Cheney. Information you will never, of course, read in Time Magazine or Newsweek or U.S. News and World Report. And don't hold your breath for Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly or Tom Brokaw to tell you what was said that morning, because this was totally blanked out by the media. Very difficult to get, but we have it, and of course we can tell you how to get it off the internet if you want to. It took me 3 days to track down that testimony, but it's real, it's valid, and you can read it in our February newsletter. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website, listen to our programs, pull down our newsletter, notice the various things that we sell that help us to stay on the air. Look at the list of tape sets or videos or books and the other items that we carry, and we give you our permission to copy anything that we have produced ourselves. Remember, you really need to get my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, or my book by the same name, or the two of them together in the Brotherhood of Darkness special. You need to get the video Diaprax in the Church to understand how the church growth movement is being used to destroy the Protestant religion. And then, of course, if you're Catholic, why, of course, you need to get the wisdom of Malachi Martin, a Jesuit priest who was a confidant of Pope John Paul XXIII, the wisdom of Malachi Martin. And this is a four-tape set. Our four-tape set on musical madness explains to you what the music in the churches is doing to the populace there. You need to get the video Megiddo, the March to Armageddon, to understand that we're in World War III right now. They just haven't told the American people. And if you think our boys are coming home from the Middle East, I think you're sadly mistaken. They're going to be there for a long time. We're going to keep a presence in the Middle East for many years to come, until the war that I fear is coming has been broken out. And then, of course, you need to get my video, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, my interview with Professor Sutton. Did that before he passed away. You need to get my video, Iraq, The Untold Story, which explains how all of the wars of the last century were contrived. There was no Gulf of Tonkin incident. The justification for all of the wars was far different than the boys who were sent overseas to bleed and suffer and die were ever to be told. And while our boys went to Vietnam to fight for freedom, why, we lost our freedom here at home. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. All of these items are available. We'll be glad to send you a free catalog. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.